What an absolute chaotic disaster Los Angeles is right now. And Renee, welcome back. I don't even know where to start with this.
Yeah, it's going from bad to worse to awful out there. And thank you for the welcome back.
Hey,
nothing to talk about, I see.
Yeah, welcome back.
Yes.
Welcome back, Renee. The world is still going to hell.
Yeah. Well, we're all caught up. I'll take another couple days.
Yeah, stay tuned for JR Morning. I guess let's start at the beginning. So on Saturday, there was word that an immigration raid was imminent at a Home Depot near downtown Los Angeles. A number of protesters gathered. Things escalated. Things moved to the federal building outside the Los Angeles federal building, where illegal immigrants were being arrested and detained. The National Guard was deployed to Los Angeles because the protests have gotten so out of control. It's let me just read here, because I'm having a hard time figuring out where to go with this. Downtown Los Angeles has been deemed an unlawful assembly zone as California Governor Gavin Newsom vows to sue the National Guard over being deployed into the city without his consent. National Guard was deployed over the weekend against protesters who were protesting against immigration raids at a Home Depot on Saturday morning. Local law enforcement, they arrived at the scene. Things escalated. The protests grew in numbers. The biggest protests moved locations to outside the Los Angeles federal building where illegal immigrants were being detained. Now, Sunday, President Trump, he signed an order deploying 2,000 National Guard troops to L.A. There are a couple hundred on the ground right now. Now, last night, things escalated. Protesters broke in and vandalized an L.A. police precinct. Police cars and other vehicles have been set on fire. Officers have had chunks of debris thrown at them. Police have fired rubber bullets and tear gas into the crowd. And this is the first time the National Guard has been deployed in a state against the wishes of the governor since the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Alabama during the Civil Rights era.
So decades.
Decades. And to make matters worse, Pete Hegseth has threatened to deploy the Marines. President Trump keeps calling these protests that have turned into riots an insurrection, because if he invokes the Insurrection Act that allows the president to deploy military against Americans in the United States. Now, Governor Gavin Newsom, everyone is urging protesters to stay peaceful, not playing the Trump administration's hands, because I got to say, it seems like they've just been dying to invoke the Insurrection Act, I think, at least since before Inauguration Day. And the more violent the protesters get, the more the Trump administration is going to escalate, and it's going to get out of hand. I mean, it is out of hand.
Yeah,
it's going to
become more. This is no longer a protest. You know, this is just a riot now. It's too bad that it went this direction, because now your message is lost.
Yeah, and that seems to be what happens. And at this point, you wonder if everyone involved in this are protesters or if they're outside agitators trying to do exactly what you said, Renee, cause violence, cause chaos, and
damage.
And, yeah, and now instead of people focusing on what the protesters are protesting against, now we're talking about the National Guard. Now we're talking about police cars on fire.
Yeah, you took it too far. You screwed up.
Now, and there are two separate issues here, right? Number one, the rioters that are getting out of control. And number two, the National Guard being deployed against Gavin Newsom's wishes and the possible use of military inside the United States against, I would imagine, a number of citizens. I would imagine not everyone protesting are citizens.
Right.
And that's a very, very scary thought. The military being deployed against people inside the United States.
Yeah, I don't know where. I don't know how you would even consider to get this under control now, because it's inflamed in two different directions.
Yeah, and I guess the area around the federal building has been cleared. However, I believe that the protests are being pushed to pushed outside, where it's a more scattered group of people, but it's more widely dispersed.
Right.
And this feels like Seattle during the first Trump administration, where it started off as a protest, then it became a riot, and then they established that demilitarized zone, which became like Escape from New York. I mean, it was just a lawless place that eventually had to be broken up by force.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
To be honest with you, I forgot about that till now.
Well, and that didn't happen till much later in Trump's first term. This is happening earlier and earlier. So, and by the way, 60 people were arrested in ICE protests that turned violent in San Francisco. So this is spreading. And again, I agree with Gavin Newsom and LA Mayor Karen Bass. You got to keep this peaceful, because not only are people going to get hurt, but the more you escalate, the more emboldened the Trump administration is going to feel to deploy assets against people inside the United States. Meanwhile, while you were gone, Renee, did you hear about this bomb threat that at Metro Airport that forced a Spirit Airlines flight to be evacuated, searched, passengers rescreened, and then put back on the flight and headed back on to its way to L.A.?
Yeah, and it's all because this person that called in the bomb threat panicked after he missed his flight. He was hoping to delay the flight so that he could get on board. Listen, I have missed a flight before. It was awful. Yeah. It was to Chicago. I ended up having to rent a car from Metro and drive to Chicago in the middle of the night because I had to be there in the morning for a meeting. It's terrible. Right. Never, never did this thought cross my mind.
Well, yeah. And so this guy, his name is James Charles Roberts. He's 23 from Monroe. I'm sorry. Thank you, Robinson. He got to the airport late. He was told by the gate agent that he would have to rebook. So he called Spirit Airlines and said, "I was calling about flight 2145 because I have information about that flight. There's going to be someone who's going to try to blow up the airport, and there's going to be someone that's going to try to blow up that flight 2145.
And gave description of someone.
I would just love to be the officer that arrested this guy and said, take me through the logic, okay? How did you think this was going to end? Did you think you were going to call in a bomb threat and they were going to search the plane, say, no bomb, no harm, no foul, case closed, and you'd get on your flight to LA? Now you're not going to be catching any flights for a while.
Then he was at the airport catching a different flight that he rebooked. That's how they caught
him. So he rebooked the flight anyway.
Yes.
It's kind of like the kid who would like call in a bomb threat because they didn't want to take a test at school.
Or pull the fire alarm.
Right. It's like, how did you think this was going to end? did you think you would get away with this? And what was so important in L.A. that you risked jail time?
Yeah, I don't want to go to L.A. right now. I can tell you that.
That's true. Obviously, this was before, but
yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if he just thought.
I don't know what he thought. Mike, I think we might have lost you. So we should start something called the dumbest criminals list. And so we'll leave that guy at that.
How about dumbest host list when I hit a button and I was talking to myself?
Jason and I had a look at each other like, what happened?
We're having a crazy morning here as is. So that was apropos that happened.
I think we
should start a little thing right now called the commercial break. It's first thing. Mike Parsons, Renee Vitale, WJR. And we are heading into JR morning. Jamie Edmonds, the birthday girl, is out. She's got some responsibilities later on this afternoon. But Chris Renwick's here.
Having some cake?
Yeah, well, no. There's a Detroit Economic Club event later on, which she's moderating. That's why I'm guessing she's off. But
I have so many June birthdays. Oh, Lloyd, yes, I'm sorry. Go ahead. Keep going.
Oh, it's okay. And Lloyd is back, and he had a birthday last week. Happy belated, Lloyd.
Thank you. Had a great time. I got a shout out. Let me just shout out the Michigan Math and Science Academy in Warren. I did the commencement speech for their graduation on Friday. I'd never done a commencement speech before. So this was a big deal for me because, you know, you have these young people who are, you know, about to go out into the world. You want to try to inspire them as best you can. And it's a small school. The class was about 26 students. And it was at Macomb County Community College on Friday evening. And my granddaughter goes to the school. She's in 10th grade.
Wow.
And I told her, she came to see her grandpa. And I told her, I said, girl, I said, you know, the only way I get juice around here is to drop your name. I'm Leah's grandfather. Oh, you're Leah's grandfather? Oh, my God. You know, otherwise, they're like,
you're like, I'm Lloyd Jackson. You're like, huh? Just crickets.
Sir, cute. We're going to have to ask you to leave. Oh, you're Leah's grandfather. Right this way, sir.
Yes.
Yes, Chris, and your June birthdays. I'm sorry.
No. We have, basically my entire, everybody I know was born in June. So are all of the birthdays that we celebrate basically throughout the year is in June.
Wow.
And so by the time we get to July, I don't ever want to see cake until next June.
Right.
It's just too much.
Next June, Chris, you'll be able to buy all your Michigan friends and family a Yingling for their birthday because Yingling is going to be sold here in Michigan on August 11th. And I know that... you grew up in Pennsylvania. You left before you were old enough to drink, but you probably have a lot of friends and families, some who might have June birthdays, still living in Philadelphia or in the Philadelphia-ish area, right?
Yeah, so I will say Yingling is, I believe it's the oldest brewery in the United States.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
Right, yeah. Which what took so long for them to get to Michigan?
Yeah, well, the Oregon Trail's been shut down, so they've been having a hard time getting here.
No more shipping routes.
Yeah, right. Yingling, I every time I go back to Pennsylvania or every time I go visit family over there, I always pick up a couple cases.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then I bring it home, and then I have a couple Yingling, and I'm like,
It's fine.
Yeah. It's fine. Like, it's not, it's one of those things where it's like, you can't, it's like a Philly cheesesteak. You can't have a Philly cheesesteak every day.
Right.
Like, you go there, you get one, and you're like, okay, I'm good for a long time. And then it's, you can't have them every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead, Lloyd.
No, I was just saying, like, if you're from here and you live in Philly or in Pennsylvania, you come here and, you know, get a Verner's.
Right.
You know, or Faygo or something.
Right.
You know?
Same thing.
Yeah.
Same thing. You ain't drinking Faygo every day, but every once in a while.
Yeah.
Solid.
Exactly.
Solid.
My husband always makes it a point to have somebody bring him a case when they go out of state that he can get it.
I got a case if you want it. I'll bring it in tomorrow.
Oh, well, you know what? Add my name to the June birthday list. Mine's the 27th.
Look at you.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. So I'll take that off your hands for me.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Look at that.
Yeah, I remember.
Regifting.
Perfect.
Yeah, right. Fine.
The thing is, you got to drink them all here before you go home.
That's the key.
That'll be a great show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Chris, I'm with you.
I tell you, Mike, this is a troublesome topic.
I don't even know.
I was excited to try Yingling at an airport in Boston, and I had it, and it was good, but I think it was kind of like before Sonic came here, where you saw the commercials, you couldn't get it, so they built the anticipation.
Right. Yeah.
So, but August 11th, everybody, enjoy your Yingling and enjoy JR Morning coming up. 11 people have been arrested overnight in downtown Los Angeles has been deemed an unlawful assembly zone as California Governor Gavin Newsom vows to sue the National Guard over being deployed into the city without his consent. Of course, the National Guard was deployed over the weekend because protesters who were protesting against immigration raids at a Home Depot on Saturday morning become riots. Local law enforcement arrived at the scene. Things escalated. The protests grew in numbers, and the biggest protest moved to outside the Los Angeles Federal Building, where illegal immigrants were being detained. Sunday, President Trump signed an order deploying 2,000 National Guard troops to L.A., things escalated overnight. Last night, protesters broke in and vandalized an L.A. police precinct. Police cars and an autonomous vehicle were set on fires. Officers were having chunks of debris thrown at them. Police officers fired rubber bullets, tear gas, flashbang grenades into crowds of protesters and rioters. Now, this is the first time the National Guard has been deployed in a state against the wishes of the governor since the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Alabama during the civil rights era. Pete Hegseth has threatened to deploy the Marines. President Trump keeps calling what's happening, an insurrection, because if he invokes the Insurrection Act, that allows the president to deploy military against Americans inside the U.S. in times of rebellion. Governor Gavin Newsom is urging protesters to stay peaceful and not play into the Trump administration's hands, because it seems like they're just they've just been dying to invoke the Insurrection Act since before Inauguration Day. And the more the protesters escalate, the more the Trump administration can escalate. And as of right now, last I heard, the area around the federal building has been secured, but this is also a multi-location incident. So that is a very frightening and developing story. Meanwhile, President Donald Trump has issued a warning to Elon Musk amidst their feud here.
Yeah, in a recent interview with NBC's Kristen Welker, the president cautioned very serious consequences could befall Musk if he chose to support Democratic candidates in future elections. Trump accused him of being disrespectful to the office of the president. And while he declined to specify the nature of the consequences, Trump signaled that Musk's government contracts and subsidies could be on the chopping block. And he also confirmed that their relationship is likely over, stating, "I have no intention of speaking to him." And he called Musk depressed and heartbroken.
What?
Strange choice of words, but okay.
Tragic and poetic. A federal judge signed off on a settlement clearing the way for schools to begin paying college athletes millions of dollars as soon as next month. Now, nearly 5 years after Arizona State swimmer Grant House sued the NCAA and its five biggest conferences to lift restrictions on revenue sharing, U.S. Judge Claudia Wilkins approved the final proposal that had been hung up on roster limits, just one of many changes ahead amid concerns that thousands of walk-on athletes will lose their chance to play college sports. Sweeping terms of the so-called House settlement include approval for each school to share up to $20.5 million with athletes over the next year and a $2.7 billion that will be paid over the next decade to thousands of former players who were barred from that revenue for years. So obviously, amateur athletics are on life support if they're even still alive, and the NCAA is kind of becoming a farm system.
Yeah, that's a great way of summarizing it.
A jobs report released last week showed job growth is slowing down. Dr. Tim Nash, director of the McNair Center for the Advancement of Free Enterprise and Entrepreneurship, breaks it down with Chris and Jamie on JR Morning.
Well, it looks like private sector job hiring is slowing much more than experts had predicted. This month, only expected to rise by about 37,000. And Jamie, that's just a very, very low number.
Yeah, we're talking about the jobs report coming out at 8:30 and just a slowing. It seems like people are bracing for these higher tariffs. And what's it all mean?
Wages annual pay grew at 4.5%. And that's a fair number, but not enough jobs. Let's bring in Dr. Tim Nash, the director of the McNair Center for Advancement of Free Enterprise and Entrepreneurship. Doctor, good to have you.
Hey, great to be with you, Chris.
These numbers are disappointing, to say the least.
Yeah, the numbers you're talking about were Wednesday's ADP report. Now, ADP does a lot of corporate programming, corporate payrolls, things like that. Companies will outsource that to ADP. And so they, for decades, have been producing a report on private sector employment. They don't get into government employment in their figures, which will come out today, as you noted, at 8:30. And so, yes, the report that came out on Wednesday was very disappointing. It was only 37,000 jobs, and the previous 2 months weren't good either. So that was April was 60,000, and March was 110,000, all lower than the average. So the numbers were disappointing, as you noted. Wages were good for people that stayed in their existing jobs, and wages were a little better in that report, 7%, for people that changed jobs for a better job. And so overall, the ADP report was disappointing, And the expected federal government report that comes out at 8:30 this morning is supposed to be down versus the last yearly average on a monthly basis. So it's averaged about, after all the corrections for the ups and downs in the Biden jobs report, the average for the last 12 months is 177,000, and it's only expected to be 130,000 from the federal report, which includes private and government sector jobs. So if that holds true, you're right. It'll be a real disappointing set of numbers from ADP and the federal government.
So the jobs number is at 125, 130, as you said. Are we concerned now? I know it shows a trend, but what number would be concerning? Under 100,000?
Oh, I think 130 is concerning, Jamie. Under 100,000 would be, I think the markets would drop dramatically if we were below, end up being below 100,000 at 8:30 this morning.
So Donald Trump on Truth Social yesterday said that Jerome Powell must lower the interest rate. He's unbelievable. Europe has lowered it 9 times. Is that the reason why this ADP report is what it is, and why the jobs report may reflect what it does?
Well, certainly the real question that Jerome Powell has is, should we lower interest rates? Is it time to lower interest rates? Have we beaten back inflation? And Jerome Powell's worried, Chris, that we haven't beaten inflation, and that if we lower interest rates too quickly, we'll have what happened under President Carter, where inflation was really bad. You know, the president notes all the time that it was the worst inflation in history under President Biden when it hit 9.1% in June of 2022. But that's just not true. The worst was, if you remember, the two of you are probably too young, but when Reagan ran on the misery index, Jimmy Carter's last year, 1980, averaged 13.5% inflation for the year. He had some months where it was well into the upper teens on a monthly basis. And then President Reagan's first year, in which he had a chairman of the Federal Reserve, Paul Volcker, who cut the money supply and kept the money supply tight to drive interest or inflation rates down. President Reagan's first year was considered to be a great step in the right direction when inflation went from 13.5% on an annual basis in 1980 down to 10.8% on an annual basis in 1981. So, you know, they're worried that what happened in the mid-70s when they increased the money supply too soon, inflation increased, and it went all the way up to 13.5% by the end of the President Carter's last term in office.
Dr. Nash, you are correct. That is pre-me, pre-Chris.
Pre-us, yeah.
But we know what you're talking about. So what other factors are economists looking at? What is the unemployment rate? Are we good there?
Well, the unemployment rate right now is good. It's at 4.2%, but that's another factor. It's a great question, Jamie. That's what the Federal Reserve is looking at. The Federal Reserve is going to be looking at GDP, and GDP, at least according to the Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta, is surprisingly strong at 4.6%. And so the Fed is saying, well, look, here's the Atlanta Fed. It's their GDP Now indicator is a good cursor. The economy is doing fine. And so that gives them pause for lowering interest rates at this time, would be my guess. I don't think we're going to see the Fed lower interest rates in the next few months. What everybody's worried about, if they have a strong economics thought process, is our current national debt. And the national debt right now is approaching $37 trillion. And the real worry is people are not buying U.S. bonds the way we want them to. So we have to refinance our debt. We began to refinance a little over a week ago, and we had to increase the interest rates because people weren't buying our debt. And we're now paying over $1 trillion in interest on the national debt, and the annual deficit built into the budget is now $2 trillion or slightly over $2 trillion. And we just can't continue to do that and be the world's superpower and the world's most respected economy, especially in terms of the dollar and the value of the dollar.
Dr. Tim Nash at Northwood University, thank you. Good to hear from you, and we'll talk again soon.
A new poll shows how American voters have reacted to companies that take a political stance.
Matt Friedman, co-founder of Tanner Friedman Strategic Communications, joins Kevin to discuss the poll.
So a recent survey reveals that nearly 4 in 10 Americans, that's 40% of this survey, say they have stopped shopping at companies whose political views they disagree with. The trend varies significantly by race, political party, and generation, with Black Americans, Democrats, and Gen Z showing higher rates of boycotting than their counterparts. Political polarization, it's increasingly influencing consumer behavior. And what does it mean for the businesses? What does it mean for the consumers? Let's bring in our friend and expert, Matt Friedman, founder at Tanner Friedman. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Kevin. Glad you're back in Detroit after seeing a lot of the state, and glad we have some data because we tend to talk a lot about these boycotts or threatened boycotts. Now we have a window into what consumers are actually doing.
Yeah, I guess this has been going on for a long time, but some of the big ones were Bud Light, I think it was. I think Target had a big one. I think Coca-Cola, didn't they have a big one?
Yeah, there have been a few here or there. Seems like a lot in beverage and retail, in these big businesses that try to appeal to a lot of people. One of the things in the data that we have now from this survey that we're talking about that I think is really interesting is that the majority of consumers surveyed, 6 in 10, say that companies have a responsibility to speak out on issues that may affect their employees. I think that's interesting because we've all been employees somewhere, one way or another, and we've all heard employers say that, you know, the workforce is the most important asset to the company and things like that. And I think that consumers reward companies that actually follow through on that and do what they say they're going to do when it comes to taking care of their employees. When it comes to everybody else, though, it's pretty divided, about half and half on whether consumers like the companies speak out and take a stand, or they don't care.
Yeah, it's really interesting. And I guess on the one hand, if you work for a company, you may feel one way. If you're just a consumer who's deciding whether to buy a product or not, you may feel more or less strongly about it. I'm sure it just depends. But I prefer to not know what a company's political stance is for the most part. And same with musicians and all of that. But it seems like whether it's social media, for whatever reason, we all seem to know where people stand, but it's interesting who is more active in boycotting and who is less active.
Yeah, those who identify as Democrats are most likely to say that they stopped purchasing a product from a company because of its politics. And that's interesting because it's been a lot of the Republican-led boycotts, things like what Kid Rock tried to do with Bud Light, what both sides have really tried to do with Target, but it started on the right, then followed up on the left because of a different issue. But the survey shows that it's Democrats that are leading the way and actually acting on these feelings. The other thing here I thought that was really interesting is that many fewer people say that they shared something or commented on something on social media that attacks a company versus made a decision to actually boycott a company. And what that says is the stuff you see on social media is not necessarily reflective of real life. It's just the people who tend to comment on everything tend to comment on this stuff too.
So what goes on in the boardrooms at these companies? How serious do they take this stuff? How important is it to their bottom line?
Great question. It's something that's actually coming up a lot. And my advice to clients has historically been that nobody has ever gone out of business by putting their customers and their employees first, and that they have to gauge the outside world and how it affects their company based on how it affects their customers and their employees and how those audiences feel about it. But the calculations around these types of decisions have become a lot more complicated as there's a lot more noise, and policymakers themselves have gotten involved in these conversations. And so that's another audience. It's always been important that companies have to navigate now when deciding how to deal with these political issues. Is it how it's going to affect their regulation, or how it's going to affect the influential voices of politicians who go on talk radio, who go on cable news, and they talk about corporations now. They'll call them out like never before. All of these factors have to be taken into consideration. These are complex conversations now that we're having.
Yeah, they say 38% of U.S. adults say they've stopped shopping at companies with political views they disagree with in the past few months alone. I wonder, though, if these companies, for the 38% they lose, if they pick up any because of the political views that they make. You know what I mean? I wonder if it offsets it at all.
That's a good question. We don't know that yet. Obviously, the bottom line comes first. Every company, every business, they look at their bottom line first. And that is what dictates business and really policy decisions. So, you know, we're not seeing a lot of companies go out of business, but we may have to see them adjust their business depending on how these issues play out, especially companies that try to market to a broad base of American consumers. That's where you see division, and that's where you see polarization as a factor.
Well, it sounds like younger consumers are pretty active in boycotts. Gen Z leads with 41%, Gen X at 36%. They have a lot of the disposable income. I would think this would be something that would jump out at companies.
Enormous. I mean, it's one of the things I'll say to clients. If you want to know how audiences feel about your company's points of view, talk to your kids or your grandkids, whoever is in that Gen Z category, because they are most likely to share information like this about a company's practices and about a company's point of view, these things that are largely unknown to some audiences or were historically unknown. The other thing, Kevin, I think that's worth pointing out, because you mentioned disposable income, is the survey shows that if you make more than $100,000 a year, you're more likely to make a spending decision based on a company's politics. And that's not really surprising, because so many people make these decisions based on cost and convenience, and they don't care about too many other factors.
Well, what do you think about this Trump-Musk feud? The liberals were mad at Musk before. They were, you know, keying Teslas. Now Musk is fighting with Trump. Does Musk face backlash from both liberals and conservatives, or do liberals jump on Team Musk now and start supporting his companies?
I mean, it's impossible to see it shifting that fast, but over time it could shift. I mean, nobody wins in these situations when it's just ugly across the board. Obviously, it's fascinating from a PR perspective and from a political perspective, so it has our attention. But it's hard to see a winner, quote-unquote, right away. But it certainly could shift opinions about Musk's businesses, namely Tesla, which had been a favorite of liberals and then became vilified by liberals. And the question is, what happens next? These are still electric vehicles that are on the higher end of the market. Where do they fit in? As of yesterday, anyway, Wall Street didn't seem to like where it was going.
Yeah, well, you're a crisis communications expert. At what point yesterday did you think this got to the crisis rage for Musk and Trump?
Almost immediately for both of them right away. But there's this infotainment factor that we have now with these particular individuals where you kind of throw a lot of the rules of crisis communication out the window. Because these are people who are certainly not like anyone else in the country, and they can get away with stuff that the rest of us can't.